Hey friends, welcome back to No More Silos. Welcome to season two. Season one sort of ended abruptly in the sense that I was just, you know, honestly overwhelmed. There's a lot going on last fall with the election and the chaos of all that, being in the midst of a pandemic. And quite frankly, I just got tired. So trying to put thoughts together that sound even remotely intelligent was just a challenge for me. In fact, the last episode that I recorded, I never posted, and it was on critical race theory, and I'm actually going to talk a little bit about that today. So, welcome back to No More Silos. This is season two, episode one. My name is Erica Santiago, and No More Silos is a podcast about cultural Christianity, about tearing down the barriers or the silos of information that we live in that kind of creates barriers to things like discipleship, to understanding our beliefs if you're a follower of Jesus. And being able to, or our goal here is really to be able to put into context some of the things that are happening in culture in our society today, especially if you live in the West, if you live in the United States in particular. And so today, we're just going to kind of introduce the new season, talk about some things, including critical race theory. And then I'm going to kind of wrap it up with some book recommendations, books that I'm currently reading or have read recently. And if you follow me on Instagram at Cultural Christianity, then you know that periodically, every couple of weeks, I post a little stack of books, a picture of a stack of books that I'm reading. And so the books that you've seen in those pictures, that's a few of the ones that I'll be talking about today. So for the next several episodes, I want to talk about how we can engage in deeper discipleship. That's kind of where my head is at in this season. By engaging in intentional spiritual disciplines that, of course, include Bible study. I think a lot of us focus on prayer, and that's a good thing. A lot of us focus maybe on even on meditation and taking time to just be silent with God and to feel His presence. And all of that is definitely part of this. But since this is a podcast about cultural Christianity, the thing that I'm most concerned about is relationships and how we can communicate with one another about what's happening in the world around us in a way that kind of moves the ball forward for spiritual growth. So the intentional discipline that includes Bible study is kind of what we're going to focus on here on this podcast. But that doesn't mean that you neglect all the others that are out there. We'll kind of touch upon those too as we go along. But the reality is, as we are here almost halfway through 2021, and 2020 is well in our rearview mirror, although some of us looked at the beginning of 2021 as 2020 2.0, right? We have endured, we have overcome, and many of us are still hanging on by a thread. We have been aggressively overwhelmed with new information in the past year, scientific information because of the pandemic, systemic racism and racial reconciliation information, because with everyone sitting at home, we were suddenly in a position where we just couldn't look away anymore. Political and social information because of a presidential election and the glaring effects that poverty has on trying to live through a pandemic. Socially, the systems or lack thereof for educational success in a world that requires resources too many American children don't have access to, lack of health resources because there's no hospital or clinic nearby or insurance to pay for it, or fresh fruits and vegetables because the only grocery store in some communities is a Dollar General. And now, this week, in the news, there are folks complaining, yes, complaining that people will not return to less than thriving wages. Notice I said thriving, not living. A thriving wage, a wage that should include the ability to purchase healthcare or participate in the healthcare system that's available. A thriving wage that allows for the option of being able to cover childcare expenses. A thriving wage that takes into consideration that someone shouldn't have to feel like they need to work two and three jobs just to make ends meet. A thriving wage that ignores the fact that a minimum wage is still seven something an hour. I mean, really, who can work for that? And why are companies upset if someone's not interested in taking a job that pays that? And there's so much I can talk about there, but we're not on the history episode yet, so I'll leave that alone for the moment. But honestly, I'll say this. Honestly, if you can't afford the cost of labor, then maybe your business model needs to be reassessed. Just because you open the doors to your business, whatever kind of business it is, doesn't mean that people are going to beat down the doors looking for a job and just accept whatever wages you give them. But when you consider this is a country that started out by enslaving a significant portion of the population in order to have free labor, you can kind of see why there's folks that are genuinely upset, perplexed, puzzled that folks don't want to work for less than a thriving wage. But this podcast is about breaking down the silos of information that exist that cause us to accept cultural Christianity in a way that is not really scripturally based or considerate of how the original audience understood and lived out the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I'll try to steer clear of economics for now. In our upcoming episodes, because as I said, this is our new season, so welcome to the new season. I'm actually kind of excited about this. We're going to discuss some of the ideas and concepts that are creating barriers to advancing the goals of discipleship. When we think of silos and then the context that I draw from, which is technology, you have silos of data and you have silos of information. And unless you network those silos together, it's really hard to share that information. And so what is relationship building but networking? What is relationship building but for the cause of discipleship, but a great way to fulfill the Great Commission, which simply says in Matthew chapter 28, to go and make disciples. That's really the whole point of the Great Commission. It's what Jesus told us to go do. He said, go and make disciples, teaching them my commandments. And what were Jesus's commandments? He only gave us really three. Two that basically encapsulate the entire Ten Commandments that God gave Moses in the Old Testament. And then the third one, he says, this new command, you find it in John chapter 13, this new command I give you, that you will love others as I have loved you. That my disciples will know, or that people will know who my disciples are by how they love. So today I want to start with critical race theory. Why do I want to start with critical race theory? Actually, because it's kind of where I left off at the end of season one. Like I said, I had recorded a whole hour long or 45 minute long episode on critical race theory and what it is. And even since then, it's something that I feel like it just keeps coming up. So I don't want to leave that topic off of our discussion, but also because it factors into some of our summer reading suggestions that I'll be sharing with you towards the end of this episode. It's a topic that keeps coming up, but here's the interesting thing about a discussion of critical race theory. As I said a moment ago, the onslaught of information that's been hitting us in this past year, in this past pandemic year, that we've been just had all this access to so much information. And the unless you're really knee deep in the racial reconciliation world, like I co-lead a group, Be the Bridge small group, where half the group is women of African American descent or African descent, and the other half are women of European descent. And in our group, which now has kind of morphed into more of a book club, where we're just reading different books together and discussing them. But we have also, we've gone through that program, through that Be the Bridge curriculum, because we're focused and we have a heart for racial reconciliation. But what's interesting is outside of the racial reconciliation conversations, most Black people and many white people don't know what critical race theory is. So when I talk to different folks at church or in Bible study that I'm doing, and I mention critical race theory, or I see something in the news, or someone posts an article that says there's a white evangelical church that is saying critical race theory is the Antichrist or it's bad, and I'm sitting there going, most people don't know what it is. So to take the time to beat up the concept or bash critical race theory without really knowing what it is, I think is kind of racist, honestly. But here's what I have to say on this. As a Black woman, I cannot speak for all Black Americans. I can't even try to. I can just speak for me. As a Black woman who is a Christian in the United States. But anecdotally, I've observed that most of the Black folks I talk to have no idea what critical race theory is. But everybody agrees in general that studying to understand and fix systemic racism in our country is necessary. In other words, when you have the white evangelical church condemning the study and research of systemic racism, yeah, that comes off as racist to everybody else. It's like, why do you have a problem with studying racism? We can't fix something we don't understand. Instead, what we get is nothing to see here. Look away. Just look at Jesus. But Jesus said this at the start of his ministry. If you look at Luke chapter 4, Luke's gospel, chapter 4, Jesus talks about setting the oppressed free. History records a version of the Bible was given to enslaved people that intentionally and strategically removed all the verses on freedom from the Bible. Nothing to see here. So, and then that is called the Slave Bible. So if you Google the Slave Bible, that will come up and you'll find that most of the book of Exodus is deleted. Most of Paul's letters are deleted. Anything talking about freedom. In fact, Jamar Tisby's book, The Color of Compromise, goes into great detail about this historical version of the Bible that when people say, and I talk about this in the episode in last season about what is historical Christianity, I give shed more light on this. When we consider how much energy, how much effort was put into giving a misrepresentation of the gospel to people of color, to people of African descent, historically, that's a problem. So when you say you don't want to academically assess the situation, which is what critical race theory is all about, then again, it sounds racist to me. That's not Christ-like, right? So Luke chapter 4, if critical race theory is so awful and so anti-gospel because it asks the scholarly, academic, critical thinking questions around understanding systemic racism and its effects on our society, then I must ask, do you believe in Jesus? Because Jesus' Sermon on the Mount follows critical thinking about the law. In our homeschool room, if you were listening to this podcast last fall or even recently, if you've downloaded any of the season one episodes, you know that I'm a homeschool mom of four. And we have a chart on the wall in our homeschool room that outlines critical thinking, like the various steps to critical thinking. And if you look at Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, it follows critical thinking about the law. Jesus says, you have heard, or you have been taught, or you've heard it said, but I tell you this. He's saying, you have this knowledge, but I'm asking you to analyze it and look at it a different way, looking at it through the lens of love, because that's what Jesus ultimately commands us, right? It's all about love. So let's start with a definition, a working definition for critical thinking. Critical thinking is the objective analysis and evaluation of an issue in order to form a judgment. The objective analysis and evaluation of an issue in order to form a judgment. That's I just typed in Google Dictionary critical thinking. That's what we get. Critical race theory, a definition for that coming from the Encyclopedia Britannica online, is the view that the law and legal institutions are inherently racist and that race itself, instead of being biologically grounded and natural, is a socially constructed concept that is used by white people to further their economic and political interests at the expense of people of color. According to critical race theory, racial inequity emerges from the social, economic, and legal differences that white people create between races to maintain elite white interests in our labor markets and politics, giving rise to poverty and criminality in many minority communities. The CRT movement officially organized itself in 1989 at the first annual workshop on critical race theory, though its intellectual origins go back much further to the 60s and 70s. Now, what's interesting is the CRT as a movement or as a theory or as an academic study really come out of just earlier critical thought, critical thinking, academic studies, looking at what is going on in the world, looking at how things, how social and individual behavior kind of work together to create the environment that we live in. And what's interesting about that from a Christian perspective, tearing down the silos here, is that if we strictly just take critical race theory as that, as a theory, as a academic construct to study systemic racism in our society and culture, then how is that different than what we learn in seminary for biblical interpretation? How to look at things like the historical context. I mean, if we're going to rightly divide the word, in seminary we're taught in the hermeneutics class, biblical interpretation, to look at the historical context, what was going on in history when that particular passage or book in scripture was written, the cultural context, what were the people, who were the people that the author was writing to originally, how would they have perceived that information, the book as an entirety, the entire book of Romans, for example, as opposed to just one chapter or one passage. And this goes on. There's like a whole set of rules around that. So how is an academic study of systemic racism any different than hermeneutics? How is it any different than critical thinking in general, which we teach in schools, in public schools? How is it different? How is it a problem unless someone doesn't want people to ask questions? And Jesus invited questions. Jesus was all for questions. Jesus was happy to answer questions and always asked us to think. So when Jesus begins his ministry, in Luke chapter 4, he talks immediately about setting the oppressed free. And if we think about the pushback with critical race theory in our culture today, in church culture today, that is part of the problem. We want people to believe that oppression should be normalized, that it's okay to pay people $7 an hour, that it's okay that someone is enslaved. You know, anyway, Luke chapter 4, verse 14 reads as such from the New Living Translation. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written. Verse 18. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Now, what's interesting, I'm going to pause here for a second. What's interesting is that Jesus is talking about freeing, and he's just quoting Isaiah. Like, he literally is just reading, and then he sits down, drops the mic, and he's like, yeah, today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. He is ready to get started. What's interesting is that he's there to proclaim the good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom, recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to declare or to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Now, in this podcast, again, it's kind of a Bible study, but not really. Go back and reread that. It goes on in verse 22, all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. Isn't this Joseph's son? They asked. Jesus said to them, surely you will quote this proverb to me, physician, heal yourself. And you will tell me, do here in your hometown what we have heard that you did in Capernaum. Truly, I tell you, he continued, no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time when the sky was shut for 3.5 years and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha the prophet, yet none of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. Jesus walked right through the crowd and went on his way. Why? Because he's Jesus. Because he's God. But catch this part. No prophet is accepted in his hometown. And in verse 28, they were furious at him and angry with him. Why? What were they angry about? This is where hermeneutics comes into play. This is why Bible study makes sense. Now, I'll leave that to you to go do that homework. But here's where what I'm pointing to when I talk about critical race theory. I don't expect people who are racist in their worldview to be excited about studying racism. Jesus set that expectation in Luke 4. I do expect all of us to ask questions and seek answers. No More Silos is about breaking down or removing barriers to our understanding of what is happening in culture. You know, you've got folks right now that are saying, oh, culture is bad, culture's against Christianity, culture's against Jesus, culture's against the church, the American church is persecuted. No, we're not. We're not persecuted, not in this country. We have all kinds of freedoms to be able to say and do what we wish. However, when we look at culture and understanding culture in Christianity and history and applying how to apply that information to our lives so that if you are a Christian, you are actually equipped to disciple others, then we have to encourage you to ask questions. Why were those people angry at Jesus? He didn't say anything except the truth. He didn't say, he asked them to go look back at history. He did say, think about what it is that you're doing. Think about what you're saying. But what we have right now in America, what is being persecuted is Christian nationalism, is white supremacy. So I would ask someone, what is it about critical race theory that you don't like? We'll talk about that in just a moment. So I was reading an article, gosh, maybe a couple of months ago, and one of the things that the author wrote about, this person was a PhD philosophy professor, but also a Christian, and he observed that a lot of times we're not all working from the same set of definitions. So when we're talking to someone, because again, we want to have fruitful conversations. As believers in Jesus, we want to make sure that everything we do is from a place of love. And for me, from a No More Silos standpoint, I'm looking at how do we remove barriers to our understanding so that we can connect those silos of information so it all makes sense. What we're doing shouldn't be so complicated. So for those folks who throw about their distaste for CRT, for critical race theory, they often include words like fascism, socialism, but they never actually define the term, so they become just these scary words like, ooh, we don't want socialism, ooh, we don't want fascism. And because most of us didn't pay attention in history class in high school, we get caught up in that anxiety that is pushed out there by Christians and even well-meaning Christians that, oh, you don't want to have this. But it makes it difficult to have an intelligent conversation about anything because we're not agreeing at least on the definitions of the terminology or the words that we're using to talk about something. So using, again, the online dictionary, the Oxford Online Dictionary, Wikipedia, and Encyclopedia Britannica, which is online, let's define a few words, and then we'll circle back to what we're talking about here. What is socialism? Socialism is a political and economic theory of social organization which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned and regulated by the community as a whole. Socialism advocates for the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned and regulated by the community as a whole. I'm just going to say Acts chapter 2, but okay. Anyway, what is Marxism? Marxism is the political and economic theories of someone named Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels that later developed through their followers, their disciples, to form the basis for the theory and practice of communism. Now, it's interesting because these are two historical figures, Marx and Engels. And so when we hear folks who are against critical race theory, they start throwing around Marxism as their reason why. But nobody ever actually defines it. So I made an attempt to define it, and what I found was there's a definitive gap between what eventually developed into communism based on someone reading the philosophy of Marxism and Engels, which is not unlike someone reading Plato and developing a philosophy or way of operating off of Plato hundreds of years later or 50 years later. But Marx and Engels lived in the mid-19th century. We're in the 21st century, so we're talking about a couple of hundred years ago almost. Also around the time of the Civil War, by the way, in a different country, not here, Marx declared that philosophy must become reality. Now, this is coming from Britannica.com. Marx declared that philosophy must become reality. One could no longer be content with interpreting the world. One must be concerned with transforming it, which meant transforming both the world itself and human consciousness of it. Thus, in turn, required a critique of one's experience. A critique of ideas. In fact, Marx believed that all knowledge involves a critique of ideas. So what uniquely characterizes the thought of Marx is that instead of making abstract affirmations about a whole group of problems, such as human nature or knowledge and matter, he examines each problem in its dynamic relation to the others, and above all, tries to relate them to historical, social, political, and economic realities. So when someone compares CRT to Marxism, what are they really saying? Well, the way this reads to me is, look away, nothing to see here. Critical thinking not allowed. Do what we tell you to do and think. But didn't Paul write to the church at Rome about renewing our minds, being transformed by our thinking? Our hearts need to be transformed so that we can live out the gospel. Jesus, when asked what is the greatest commandment, shared two. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then later he gave one more command. He called it a new command, to love others as he has loved us. His disciples would be known by how they love. And later Paul interprets that in his letter to the church at Corinth, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. What does spiritual maturity look like? If your church is telling you to remain a spiritual child and only look to them for information, then that's a problem. Because that's not Christ-like. That's not what Jesus, God made us in his image. And we'll talk about that in a later episode about the Imago Dei. The dignity of being made in the image of God. But I have two more definitions for you that kind of will help lay the foundation as we go through this new season in No More Silos, digging deeper into looking at how the barriers to discipleship in our culture and in cultural Christianity. The next definition I have for you is fascism, because that's another scary word. And fascism is very real. Fascism is something that happened in Europe that predicated World War I and II. So I understand, I get the anxiety around that word. According to Wikipedia, fascism is a form of far-right authoritarian ultra-nationalism characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and strong regimentation of society and of the economy, which came to prominence in the early 20th century Europe. I'll read that again, but I'll read it a little bit faster. I took my time this first time. What is fascism? Fascism is a form of far-right authoritarian ultranationalism characterized by dictatorial power, forcible suppression of opposition, and strong regimentation of society and of the economy, which came to prominence in early 20th century Europe. Isabel Wilkerson's book, Caste, is a great book that explains what regimentation of society looks like. Ultranationalism, I talked about that in the previous episode. That's what we have here right now with white nationalism, Christian nationalism, waving American flag in the church as if that is not idolatry. What is capitalism? Or is our final definition? Because capitalism is what makes our economy. That is our economic force in America. And so it's important to understand that in context of all these isms that people are saying are bad, alongside of critical race theory. What is capitalism? Capitalism is an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. Okay, so private industry, all for it. Makes sense. So those are our definitions for fascism and capitalism and Marxism and socialism and critical race theory. And I think those are things that really... right now in cultural Christianity, they keep coming up. They just keep coming up. And so it's important to make sure that you understand what those words actually mean, what their dictionary definitions are, not just what someone is applying to it or using it for. They may be using it incorrectly. And I'm not advocating for fascism or Marxism or capitalism or socialism. You know, I'm not advocating for one or the other. I'm advocating for Christianity, for following Jesus. I'm advocating for thinking. God created each of us in his image with a mind to think, to learn to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, which brings me to where I'm at this season. In season two of No More Silos, I'm focusing on equipping the saints, discipleship. And so here's my top five books, the five books that we're going to kind of use as foundational tools over the next few episodes. I'll probably bring in others, but I want to review a few books that I think will be great summer reading for us, for you, useful resources for engaging and thought-provoking conversations as you disciple others. So here are the top five books, and I'll give you my version of a brief summary for each. The first one is called Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, because, you know, if we're going to talk about discipleship, start with a book on discipleship. And trust me when I tell you, I have a shelf full of discipleship books. But the subtitle on this one is Moving from Shallow Christianity to Deep Transformation. It's by Peter Scazzaro, and he's the guy that did the Emotionally Healthy Spirituality and Emotionally Healthy Relationships, and has a whole he's built an entire discipleship course around all of this. But he's come out with a book recently, and he talks about overcoming the failures of our previous discipleship efforts, because obviously we've got this, you know, whole shelf of books and all of that's not working. But he also gives us a path forward that takes into consideration the environment and culture that we live in right now. And so we'll talk about that some more in our next episode. The second book is called Urban Apologetics. Urban Apologetics is by Dr. Eric Mason. And I am a huge fan of Dr. Mason. He's the guy that wrote Woke Church a few years ago. And in fact, a lot of times when you hear or see people talk against critical race theory, they also invoke that word, woke. Is your church too woke? Be careful going to a woke church. And it's anyway, Urban Apologetics, the subtitle is Restoring Black Dignity with the Gospel. And when I tell you this is a powerful book, I have not been able to put it down. But I'm not done with it yet because I'm reading it slowly because I'm really trying to digest it. Urban Apologetics provides the necessary background info for discipling and evangelism conversations in today's environment, especially if you're talking to someone who has been on the periphery of church. So they think they know what's going on at church, but they're not really sure, or they have been involved previously in organizations that focus more on cultural identity as a black person or a brown person and less on Christianity. And so he gives provides the tools for having those kinds of conversations. But at the same time, and most importantly, the overarching theme of the book is restoring black dignity with the gospel, because we are all made in the image of God. And anything less than that, treating anyone less than that, is problematic. And so how do we respond to that as Christians? So that's Urban Apologetics. Number three is The Making of Biblical Womanhood. Along the same lines as Urban Apologetics, this one, I literally read it over the course of like maybe 3 days because I couldn't put it down. There's been a lot of talk, even this week, there's been a lot of discussion about women in the church. And the interesting thing about this book is that if you are outside of the southern United States, and so you may not be in close contact with the white evangelical church or the Southern Baptist denomination, this may seem like why are we writing about that? But it gives us historical context, just as Urban Apologetics provides the necessary background info for discipling and evangelism conversations. The Making of Biblical Womanhood, and the subtitle for this one is How the Subjugation of Women Became Gospel, by Dr. Beth Allison Barr. It provides the theological and historical background to address how scriptures involving women have been repeatedly taken out of context to support an unhealthy and anti-gospel worldview and power structure for centuries. It explains how we got to a place where people are clutching their pearls over three women being ordained in a Baptist church. It's interesting. It's thought-provoking, and I was surprised as I was reading it. My undergraduate degree is in English. How much I remembered from my women's literature in the Middle Ages class that I took in college, because a big chunk of the historical context is there have been women centuries upon centuries upon centuries, this century, the last century, and all the centuries in between, since Mary Magdalene left the tomb, the empty tomb, to say, hey, He's not there on Easter Sunday morning, on Resurrection Day. When a woman announced the resurrection all the way through the centuries, Middle Ages, the 19th century, the 20th century, there have been women proclaiming the gospel who have held leadership roles in churches, have across the gamut, and even in the New Testament. And how, going back to what I said earlier about the rules around hermeneutics, around biblical interpretation, how we have, in our current context, missed it because somebody decided to define historical Christianity as starting in the 1700s with slaveholding theologians. But anyway, so those power structures, The Making of Biblical Womanhood by Beth Allison Barr. Definitely recommend that book. Now, while we're on the topic of biblical interpretation, the next book, book number four that I want to encourage you to read this summer is Reading While Black. And I just realized I left the book upstairs, so I don't have it right in front of me for the subtitle, but it uses the word hope. and biblical interpretation, because that's what the book is about. Reading While Black, the chapter especially on social justice is powerful. But overall, this book provides a modern perspective on how Black people in America interpret scripture as an exercise of hope. And historically, when we look at speeches, the speeches of Frederick Douglass and Mariah Stewart from the 19th century, who used the gospel to make their case for abolition, used the gospel to make their case for women's rights in general. A lot of the abolitionists, when you read their work, it is grounded in the gospel. It's like, I don't understand why you how y'all missed this in the gospel. But again, it's interpretation, how hopeful they were that in spite of the rhetoric from the white church, they believed the gospel of Jesus Christ, despite the fact, in spite of the fact that the slave Bible existed that took out all the chapters on freedom. They still managed to get their hands on copies, actual copies, full copies of God's word. Esau Macaulay, who wrote Reading While Black, who's the author of Reading While Black, does an excellent job conveying the spirit of hope through the gospel that we all should see when we read it and the historical and theological context that is necessary to respond to false gospels. And that's something that's also addressed in urban apologetics, and that's why these are all grouped together. And so my final book, that I recommend actually is not one that's come out recently. All of these books, the first four, all have come out in the last several months. Reading While Black came out last fall, but Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, Urban Apologetics, The Making of Biblical Womanhood all have come out this spring. The last one that I want to mention, because I think that it really was a turning point in cultural Christianity a few years ago, is Irresistible by Andy Stanley. And he asked the question of why was the early church, why was the gospel so irresistible to the early church, to early Christians, people who made radical changes in their culture and society. And he asks the question, what does love require of me? And it's the only book in my top five right now that's not from this year. And why? Because I still reference this book when I'm teaching, because it provides a starting point for understanding how the early church understood and lived the gospel. Andy Stanley makes the point that the early Christians did not have the Bible, not the Bible we know it, not bound together in 66 books. They may or may not have had a copy of the Greek translation of the Old Testament called the Septuagint. They may have had one of the Gospels, maybe one or two of Paul's letters, but not all of them. It wasn't until the second century that the 22 books or 27 books that make up the New Testament were really kind of canonized, in a sense that these were the books that theologians and apologists kept referring to. So he explains all of that in this book and how they were able to focus on what they did have, which were eyewitness accounts of people who heard Jesus teach, people who saw him accused, saw him crucified. And these people were going off the eyewitness accounts of the people who saw Jesus after the resurrection, heard him teach, heard the disciples, now apostles, teaching his commands, went around making disciples. How powerful must that have been for them? And I believe that discipleship now is really built on that relationship, that one-on-one, one-to-three relationship. Who are your three? Who are the people that you are most in contact with, that you can connect those silos of information to equip them to be able to make more disciples? Equipping people now must be sure to include the excitement of building a community based on loving God, loving one another, loving the others in our society, because that's what we see Jesus do. And what does love require of me as a filter for how we relate to everyone we come in contact with? And that's what made the early church, the gospel message of Jesus Christ, so irresistible. And Andy Stanley does a fine job in his book by that title from a few years ago. And so that's why it's one of my top five. So Irresistible, Reading While Black, The Making of Biblical Womanhood, Urban Apologetics, and Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. Because guess what? We're going to talk about discipleship in our next episode. And expand our conversation with these books as a starting point. So if you want to read them, go ahead. I highly recommend them. Grab a copy, or you can wait until after we talk about it pick them up later if you want to have more information, if I don't go far enough for you. And I'll likely add others. I intend to add others as we go, because I have a terrible, terrible habit of buying more books faster than my husband can buy me bookshelves. So thanks so much for joining me today. I hope that you will find the next several episodes in this new season of No More Silos helpful in both your personal journey to grow as a follower of Christ and also in how you disciple others in your circle, in your network, and tearing down those silos, connecting those networks. If you have questions or ideas for future episodes or any book recommendations, maybe there's something that you're aware of that I'm not aware of, feel free to follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Cultural Christianity. Cultural Christianity, or send me an email at podcast@ericasantiago.com. podcast@ericasantiago.com will get to me, and that's Erica with a K. I'll update the show notes with the book recommendations so that you can find all of that, because I know sometimes I talk fast. One of the challenges of being raised in the North and then now living in the South and being told I talk too fast. So thanks for listening. I am so glad to be back for season 2 of No More Silos. I hope you'll join us in our next episode, where we're going to define discipleship and talk through a little bit of emotionally healthy discipleship by Pete Scazzaro. Thanks again for joining me.